let's just jump right in and into the life of Abraham. And here are three things, absolute must of understanding the book of Genesis. You get up to the life of Abraham, and in the Garden of Eden, you learn about sin. Why is the Eden story there? Well, it answers a whole lot of questions, but in reference to the scheme of redemption, it's those early chapters of Genesis that helps us understand what sin is and the consequences of sin. Adam and Eve are in the garden, and they do such an innocent thing as pulling some fruit off of the tree, and God says, "Wait a minute, I told you not to do that." And the reaction of God to that should forever mark us in our minds about obedience. I've got a grandson, the one that you know that Gary and Daniel's son Daniel, and he reminded me of an incident in our life. I don't think I've told this story, but a lot of times we'd pick those kids up after school and everything. Gary and Jackie were both working, and so we were there. And, Judy is so loving and so kind, and he was just sort of pushing the envelope. He wasn't being openly rebellious at all, but I just didn't think there was enough respect there. And so he said something to Judy, and, the short fuse on my, got lit, and I grabbed him by his arm, and I said, "Let's go out in the garage." Went out in the garage, and there was one of these, when you go to the beach, one of those little plastic buckets and one of these plastic shovel that goes with it. And I said, "You are never, ever going to disrespect your grandmother that way again." And so I took that plastic shovel and I whopped him about two or three times. Now, in recent years, his memory of that is different. His memory is that he vows and declares it was not a plastic shovel. That it was a shovel that had a rusty end on it with a wooden handle, and I hit him multiple times. And so after I had finished whatever kind of administration of corporal punishment there was, I do remember saying, "You see that big shovel over there in the corner? If you ever disrespect your grandmother again, I'm going to hit you with that." And he said, I went back in, and he said, all I could think of was, "I don't have a clue what the word disrespect means." Now, God's not that way. Thou shalt not eat of it. Thou shalt not touch it. Thou shalt not eat of it. And that's disrespect. What they did was absolute disrespect. And you've reacted that to your kids. It's not... They do a lot of things that don't push the envelope, but when they're ready to disobey and they look at you and they smile, when you say, "Be careful, don't knock your glass of milk over," children do that. But whenever you say, "Be careful, don't knock your glass of milk over," and they look at you, they look at the milk, and then they put their hand out there and push it over. Now, of course, I didn't have any children like that, but that's disrespect. And that's what Genesis, that's what the story of the Garden of Eden is. You're not going to mess around with God. And so there's the consequences of it. And then you don't get five chapters. You don't get four pages into the book of Genesis, probably maybe six or eight pages into the book of Genesis, till you get to Genesis chapter 6. What's that? Why is that story in the Bible? Well, for a lot of reasons, but as a part of the whole scheme of redemption, it is to teach us God's reaction to sin in bringing righteous judgment against sin. That's why it's there. When somebody says, "I don't believe a good God would send anybody to hell," well, ask, I don't know how many million, you want to make it 20 million? Ask 20 million people in Noah's day. I mean, the Bible talks about and uses the story of Noah over and over in the New Testament to talk about the judgment of God. And this, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. Eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. Noah in the New Testament. the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah while the ark was preparing, not willing that any should perish. But they did. And so the Bible talks about the flood, and there's and the emphasis in the Bible has to do with the fact that God is going to be righteous in judgment. He waited and waited till for the ark to be prepared, and then it was not prepared. Now, there are 10 generations from Adam to Noah. There are 1,656 years from the creation of Adam until we get all the way over to the coming of the flood, 1,656 years. You stop and he can make that without you looking. You stop and look at it. What do we know about that 1,600 years? Don't know. Think of how little you know. When I say Methuselah, that's probably the one thing everybody knows. Methuselah, you know that name? If I say Enoch, yeah, sounds like somebody in the Bible. Yeah, I went to school with a guy. No, not the guy you went to school with named Enoch. One little verse, one little paragraph, and that's it. And from Adam, well, I've got to say Cain and Abel, but once you get beyond Cain and Abel, all the way to the flood, we know nothing. We know Enoch, we know Methuselah, and that's about it. And so then all of a sudden, we've got the first five chapters, really we've got chapters 4 and 5. To cover almost the entirety of that 1,600 years. And then all of a sudden you get to chapter 6, and you got chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 8. Why? Why is that story in there? And the fact that it is in there and there's so much detail given to it, it ought to tell us something, and we ought to spend some time learning everything we can about that flood. Now the end result is, it shows us the righteous judgment of God. Noah chapter 6 and verse 8. Maybe Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8 says, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Brother Camp used to say, the older preacher that impacted my life, first time a word appears in the Bible, you'd better stop and look at it. You want to understand what grace is? You want to understand the relationship between grace and faith and obedience? Study the first time grace is found in the Bible. There it is. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. First of all, it says he was not sinless. And secondly, it tells about the nature of God and the fact that God longs for everybody to be saved. And while it repented God that he made man, the grace of God was shown to Noah. And there are three chapters devoted to that. And while we're mentioning that, let's jump in our minds, and we hopefully will be able to cover some of it in the weeks that remain, there are as many chapters in the Bible devoted to Joseph as there are to Abraham. You don't need those chapters. I mean, forgive me, I don't mean that disrespectful. But Joseph is a minor character in the Bible. Those last part of the book of Genesis in three verses. And it came to pass that there was a famine in the land. Forget about Joseph. And Jacob and his children moved down to the land of Egypt. And that's all you need. And then you could start the book of Exodus. And when they had been there 400 years. And then you talk about the slavery that was there, because that's in the book of Exodus. And God raised up. I mean, you could perhaps add the fact that, well, Exodus talks about how the children of Israel had multiplied in the land, so you could close Genesis out with two verses. And you wouldn't, why do you need the rest of that? Why is that story of Joseph there? Well, a 17-year-old boy with faith in God. Think of all of the lessons that come out of that. And the presence of God, and you meant it for evil, and God meant it for good. And I'm going to talk about providence in my sermon this morning. But it's providence. It's God in the shadows. It's how God's going to work everything out for our own good. You know, you've got every bit of that kind of understanding that's in that story of Joseph. And so you need to stop and say, why is that in the Bible? Chet helped me understand this. Chet says, people talk about the unimportance of baptism, haven't read 1 Peter chapter 3 and Genesis chapter 6. The like figure whereunto even baptism saves us. Like figure unto what? The like figure unto Noah being saved by water. And then it says, the like figure, in a like figure, in a parallel to that, as Noah was saved by water, even so baptism saves us. And Chet said, Chet Brown said, God was willing to destroy the world with a flood to teach everybody the importance of baptism. And then when I heard that, whoa, what a jump. But it's not that massive a jump, is it? I mean, if he was willing to wipe out, you know, millions and millions of people so that he'd have a like figure whereunto baptism could be taught to us. It's an amazing thing. Now then, you get beyond Noah. What happens between Noah and Abraham? 10 more generations. You only know one thing that happened. Tower of Babel. And so now then, you are 11 chapters into the most important book of the Bible, and you hardly know anything. You know, is that right to say you know one day in the Garden of Eden? You know, talking about Adam and Eve. I'm not talking about the creation, but I'm just talking about the one day in the Garden of Eden. You know one day in the life of Cain and Abel. You know 4 days in the life of Noah. And that's it. That to me is remarkable. Here's over 2,000 years of Bible history, and we know events and everything and comments that are made, but when you're talking about just details day after day, once you get to Abraham, you start getting back to it. But it's not details at all. Tower of Babel. How many verses? Half a chapter. That's all it is. And remarkable even why that's in the Bible. The Bible is amazing how God put it together. And we're not wise enough to figure out why God put all of these things in there, but whatever He put in there has real importance. That's why when you talk about verbal inspiration, you need to look at every word in the Bible and know that God chose that specific word. He had a whole choice. You know, His vocabulary is a little bit greater than ours. And he chose that very word to put in that very verse so that we'd understand exactly what He was trying to say in relationship to it. Now, when you get to Abraham, the world has headed toward evil again. And so God selects Abraham and makes 3 promises to him. We've talked about this. I just wonder how good my teaching has been. The word great is found in relationship to every one of these promises. I will do what? What's the first great? Make you what? I'll make you a great nation. Did He do it? Yeah. Now you've got to read those other chapters in Genesis to find out how long it was before God fulfilled His promise. Abraham's 100 years old, still doesn't have any children, still doesn't have the son of promise. And yet God has told him He's going to make of you a great nation, and he's 85 years of age and still doesn't have a son. Doesn't have any descendants at all, and he's 85 years of age, and God said, I'm going to make of you a great nation. Well, when, God? But you know, I'm getting old, and the Bible talks about the deadness of his own body in reproducing. It's an amazing thing. And yet, Abraham believed God, Abraham believed God, Abraham believed God so much that he was willing to kill his own son because God told him to do it. Leave Ur of the Chaldees, faith. What's the emphasis in Abraham? It's got to be faith. And that's where faith comes into our lives. That doesn't mean that he did not struggle with his faith. I'm glad, not that I'm glad that he did it, but I am glad that God told about Abraham getting Sarah to tell a lie so Abraham wouldn't have trouble in his life. I'm not glad he did it. But when I was a kid, you know, in Sunday school, those guys were sinless. You know, talking about these superheroes, is that the terminology I want to talk about? The modern group of heroes on television and movies? They were my heroes. And yet, if I say Abraham and lying, what if I say Samson? There's you a superhero. Well, what about Delilah? What about all that other stuff in his life? Well, a man after God's own heart. Now, boy, there's you a hero. Isn't that amazing? Part of the evidence, the inspiration of the Bible is the honesty of the Bible in helping us understand some. And I'm glad that God told us every one of these things. But the emphasis of the life of Abraham has to do with us having an understanding of what faith is all about. And you get to the New Testament, and faith and Abraham are tied together over and over. That's why that story's in the Bible. Now, it's a part of that story. I'm going to make of you a great nation. Now, what's the second great? I'll put this great nation in a great land. Now, Abraham's in that land. When Sarah dies, guess what Abraham does not have? He doesn't even have enough land of his own in which to bury his wife. Had no burial plot. And yet God said, I'm going to make of you a great, and I'm going to give you this great land. And that's remarkable. Now, when God says to Abraham, I'm going to give you this great land, he says, walk all over it, east, and we've looked at these verses, east and north and south and every direction. Walk all over it, and every place your footsteps, I'm going to give you this land. Now, Novell, you just imagine if God made that promise to you about Palm Beach County. Where would you start walking? You're Palm Beach. Well, you're not as dumb as I thought you were, you know. Well, why? Because, man, that's the treasure. That's the treasure. And so when Lot takes the best land, guess what? Go ahead. When I walk over there, it's mine. That's remarkable, isn't it? But then he says, however, your descendants, great nation, they're going to go into a foreign land and be there for 400 years. And after 400 years, I'll bring them back. They'll be treated. They'll be evilly oppressed. We know about the Egyptian bondage. So Abraham dies, and by the time he dies, he has Ishmael, he has Isaac, he has Zimran, Jokshan, Midian, Ishbosheth, and Shua. To me, in my mind, that's just one word. You know, I can't start in the middle, but if you heard the word Midian, think of the Midianites. That's where they come from. And so you've got to... he's got eight children, and then he dies, and what does he have? He's got a lot of possession, and he owns one little burial plot, a cave that he bought from some people, and so it's not even a place you could put sheep or anything. All he's got is a cave, and that's all that he owns when he dies. And so God makes a third promise. And we've paraphrased the third promise so we can put the word great. Make a great nation. Put you in a great land. And send what? Send a great Savior. And when you get to Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, and over in the life of Abraham, God says again and again, in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. I mean, when I say that, you'd recognize that as a Bible quotation. In you and your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. It's that way. And that's a phrase that's found again and again. And that's the story of the Bible. That seed, Galatians chapter 3, verse 16, that seed is Jesus. And so God said to Abraham, make of you a great nation, put you in a great land, and one of your descendants, the word seed is singular. In your seed, singular. Not in your descendants, in your one singular, great, 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 and what, there are 40 generations, and so if you put 38 greats in there and then put grandfather after that, I think it'll get you to 40. Your greats to the 38th power, whatever that, however you'd say that, Jesus comes. And that's the story of the Bible. And guys, you need to teach your children this. You need to teach your grandchildren this. First of all, you need to learn it yourself. But that's what the Bible is all about. And so when you get beyond Genesis 12 and you see the real fullness of that promise when Abraham offers Isaac over in Genesis chapter 22, when God stops Abraham from killing Isaac, you get to chapter 22 and God repeats that emphatically. But it's all the way through. From Genesis 12 to Genesis 22, you keep running across references to that. Great nation, great land, great Savior. Now the details of Abraham's life and the events in Abraham's life is really outside the scope of what we're not studying, the life of Abraham in this study. We're trying to understand and survey the book of Genesis, and that's why we just keep saying great nation, great land, great Savior. We got to get that in our head. When we think of Genesis, Genesis meaning beginning, and it is beginning of the Jewish nation. And so we can talk about the events of the life of Abraham. We perhaps ought to talk about the matter of circumcision. Is circumcision mentioned anywhere else in the Bible? Yeah, what about in every verse, every New Testament book? That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's not that great an exaggeration. Now, the Jews looked on circumcision as a means of righteousness. Get that? If a man was circumcised, he's all right. I'm talking about the Jews in Jesus' day. Jesus said of the Jews, you encompass sea and lands to make one proselyte. What's a proselyte? Okay. He's a Gentile who's given up his paganism to become a Jew. You know what they required of them? You must be circumcised. Now, the reason that's a problem in the New Testament, the reason that's a problem is because the New Testament, the church, says circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing. Doesn't make any difference whether you're circumcised or not in relationship to God. And there are three times it's found. Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing but faith which works through love. Can you stop and put that in your head? The Jew says, I'm righteous. Why? Child of Abraham, I've been circumcised like Abraham was, and that's where it all started, right there with Abraham. Therefore, I've been circumcised. Therefore, I'm righteous. Circumcision is nothing. Now, no honor, no dishonor, Uncircumcision is nothing. No honor, no dishonor. What's important? Faith that works through love. Isn't that amazing? That's us, guys. Is faith important? Faith is as important to us as it was to Abraham. Now then, listen to this. Though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not what? Charity, the King James. Have not love, what? I'm nothing. You want to sum up relationships to God? Faith, and that's devotion and obedience. But it's not just, you know, obedience without any regard for anything. But it is faith that works, faith that loves. Faith that works through love. Interesting. There's your sermon right there. Faith that works through love. Think of that word through. I just did. You know, faith that works through love. Show me your faith. And through my works, through faith working, through love working, I'll show you my faith. That's interesting. And that, another time it's found, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing but keeping the commandments of God. In the days when people say, oh, you don't spend much time looking at what God said. Don't worry about those details. Well, you want to tell, you want to tell every character in the Bible, don't worry about the details. Think of all the times in the Old Testament the details did matter. Now, I'm opposed to Phariseeism, and that is details, paying so much attention to details like circumcision that your heart's not impacted by it. But the tragedy is we live in a day and age, and it's becoming more and more prevalent. Sometimes even in the church, people say, well, those details don't really matter. You can just as long as you're really, you know, you feel spiritual and really motivated and all the rest, and so let's just forget about what God says. So many problems that come about in the church come from people failing to understand that circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but keeping the commandments of God. That's interesting. Now that's, you get to circumcision, and look in Romans chapter 4. Here is what circumcision is all about. The Jews thought that circumcision was meant righteousness. If you are circumcised, then you are righteous. If you're circumcised, then you are righteous. Look in Romans chapter 4, verse 11. Let's back up. Don't look anywhere. Verse 1 says, what shall we say about Abraham? Let's learn about righteousness through Abraham. Let's learn about righteousness through Abraham. How was Abraham justified? And so he quotes from Genesis chapter 15 in verse 3 of Romans 4, Abraham believed God and it was imputed unto him for righteousness. What was? Faith. And so Abraham is declared righteous in Genesis chapter 15. Now when you get to Romans 4 and you get to verse 10, how then was it accounted? Was Abraham's faith accounted for righteousness when he was circumcised or when he was uncircumcised? When the Bible said, you know, his faith was accounted to him for what, you know, was he circumcised or not circumcised? And he says, not while circumcised, but uncircumcised. I believe this is one of the most profound arguments in the Bible. I would have hated to have been a Jew trying to answer this argument. There's no answer to it. Tim, you can't write a legal brief any better than this one right here. Abraham justified by God. Question, is circumcision a part of justification or not? Abraham believed God and he was righteous. Is circumcision a part of that or not? Was he circumcised when he believed God or uncircumcised? And the answer is, he was uncircumcised. Which means you can be righteous without being circumcised. And all those people in the causing all those problems in the first century church by trying to tear the church up and bind circumcision on the Gentiles, the people they wanted to make proselyte and become Jews and be circumcised, and they see the church getting all these Gentiles coming in, and they try to capture the church and take it away from Jesus and make it an avenue to bind circumcision. This answers it, guys. I hope you feel the force of this. Abraham was righteous before he was circumcised. What does circumcision have to do with righteousness? No answer to it. Then what is circumcision? Verse 11, he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while he was uncircumcised. Those are words. What does that mean? What's a seal? S-E-A-L. Don't say somebody eats fish. Ever see a notary seal? Ever seen the seal of the President of the United States? By the way, just in passing, do you know there are only three of those seals of the President of the United States on display anywhere in the world? You didn't know that. One of them's at Disney. I bet you've seen that one. One of my grandkids crawled through that little fence they had around there and got inside and was crawling around on the seal of the President of the United States. I just thought it was cute. A seal authenticates something. You have a document, you get a notary to sign it, and that says this is the official. This gives total credibility to it. Now, circumcision was a seal of what? Circumcision was not righteousness. It was the seal of righteousness. What kind of righteousness? The righteousness of faith. That's what circumcision is. Now, if circumcision is the seal of the righteousness by faith, and if you have no faith, guess what? Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing. Isn't that amazing? And so that all of a sudden becomes part of our culture. Far as we know, there was no circumcision prior. There are two religions on this earth that, as a part of their doctrine, a part of their religion, bind circumcision. Any idea what they might be? If you said the Jews, you're heading the right direction. Yep. Still a religious act. The other one. The Muslims. You know where the Muslims claim to come from? You know where they really come from? Ishmael. You know who circumcised Ishmael? Abraham did. I find that rather ironic and everything. And so Ishmael becomes a part of making you a father of many nations. You think of how many Arabs there are in this world, descendants of Abraham, just like the Jews are descendants of Abraham. Make of you a great nation? Absolutely. And so circumcision is important in the book of Genesis. You just think about it. Whenever those men of Shechem wanted to marry Jacob's daughter, you know that story? One of my sons, reading the Bible on his own, came and was reading the Bible on his own, and he read about this story. And I'll tell you what he said about it after we tell the story. The men of Shechem wanted to marry Diana. Dinah. Who's Dinah? Jacob's daughter. Jacob had 12 sons and had a daughter named Dinah. They wanted to marry Dinah. And Jacob says, no, you cannot have her. You're uncircumcised. And so all of the men of that city were circumcised. And Jacob's two sons goes over there and kills all those men. That son of mine came and said, Dad, you're not going to believe this is in the Bible. He thought that was such a cruel thing. Well, it was, but why is that story in the Bible? It's to emphasize to the reader of the Bible just the absolute importance of circumcision. It's there. It's a part of the. It's a part of our world as religious acts. It's a part of our world, and we need to understand where it comes from. I just find it fascinating, the stories that are in the Bible. And so did my son, who whenever he read that story about these guys, about talking about how sore they were, and they came over there and killed him. He said, that just doesn't seem fair to me. Real interesting. I loved his reaction when he said, Dad, do you know this is in the Bible? He was just an interesting story. Isaac circumcised. Abraham dies. And now here's Isaac, and God says to Isaac, I'm going to make of you a great nation, put you in a great land. If I ask you, what do you know about Isaac? What do you know? You know how few details we know about the life of Isaac? That's remarkable. Oh, yeah. No. That's the Abraham story, Abraham offering Isaac. Take that one out. Now tell me what you know about Isaac. You know? We know about his marriage. I don't know if you know about his marriage or not. Abraham is about ready to die, and he doesn't want his son Isaac to marry some pagan. And so he takes his most trusted servant and sends his servant on a journey of, 600 or 700 miles to find a wife for Isaac. Why? Who you marry determines how faithful you're going to be to God. And so the servant goes over there, and the details of that story probably don't matter, but it's fascinating if you'll read the details. How's he going to find that woman over there? And the details are fascinating. But our assignment is not to look at every one of them. But I would just beg of you to read that story about trying to find that wife. I don't know what chapter it is. Just pick a chapter and double, but it's got about 60 verses in it that'll help you find it. And that's what we know about Isaac. I know one other thing about Isaac. God said to Isaac, oh, Isaac, I'm going to make of you a great nation, put you in a great land, and send a great Savior. See how important that is? Not Ishmael. Isaac is coming through you. Now, Isaac has two boys, and that's Jacob and Esau. And I guess we can sort of sum up this, and we'll start next week talking about Jacob and Esau. God makes a promise to Jacob, not to Esau. I'm going to make of you a great nation, put you in a great land, and send a great Savior. Jacob's other name is Israel. Israelites, children of Israel. I'm going to make a great nation called the children of Israel. I'm going to put the children of Israel in a great land. And through the children of Israel, I'm going to send a great Savior. Our work's cut out for us. We're running out of weeks to cover the book of Genesis, but I believe we're doing a reasonable job.